first of all, thank you very much for the invitation. And thank you very much to also give me the opportunity to see this wonderful exhibition as you saw. And in a relationship of what we are or we are not discussing today, and of the exhibition, I would like to present a document which maybe speak in echo backward to the exhibition, as it's a document from 1948. So it's a document which deals with capitalism and not post-capitalism. And I will simply first present you a few extracts of this document. It's in French, but it's not only about the wording, but also about sound. And it was censored on the radio, French radio. It was planified to be played on the major French radio on the 2nd of February, 1948. And it was finished to be produced in the radio in November 47, but the interdiction to play the broadcasting happened just right before the broadcasting. One, the radio had it for quite a long time in the hands. So that's brought a big question to the author of this radio broadcast, which was Antonin Artaud. And the question was, why did you wait the last minute to cut the broadcast of the piece when you knew it, you had it for more than 1 month? The title of the piece is Pour en finir avec le jugement de Dieu.
Um dem Urteil Gottes ein Ende zu setzen.
And I thought in relation also of yesterday's discussion to the exhibition, it's a quite interesting piece. As it's in French, I'm not going to play it entirely. And with the great help of Jean-Baptiste Joly, we will just make a little synthetic translation of it for the one who don't know the piece. Okay, we listen to it.
Veuillez entendre pour en finir avec le jugement de Dieu. Par Antonin Artaud, avec le concours de Roger Blin, Maria Cazares, Paul Thévenin et l'auteur.
Un faux bruit, l'un de ces sales ragots, comme ils sont colportes entre évier et latrine, à l'heure de la mise au baquet des repas, une fois de plus ingurgités. J'ai appris hier l'une des pratiques officielles les plus sensationnel des écoles publiques américaines et qui font sans doute que ce pays se croit à la tête du progrès. Il paraît les examens ou épreuves que l'on fait subir à un enfant qui entre pour la première fois dans une école publique aurait lieu l'épreuve dite de la liqueur séminaire ou du sperme et qui consisterait à demander à cet enfant nouvel entrant un peu de son sperme afin de l'insérer dans un bocal et de le tenir ainsi prêt à toutes les tentatives de fécondation artificielle qui pourraient ensuite être tentées. Car, de plus en plus, les Américains trouvent qu'ils manquent de bras et d'enfants. C'est-à-dire, non pas d'ouvriers, mais de soldats. Et ils veulent à toute force, par tous les moyens possibles, faire et fabriquer des soldats.
Ja, mir kam zu den Ohren, dass eine der offiziellen Praktiken an öffentlichen Schulen in Amerika, in dem Land, das von sich behauptet, es sei an der Spitze des Fortschrittes, dass unter den Examen oder Eintrittsprüfungen für Kinder an solchen öffentlichen Schulen man ihnen von ihrem Sperma etwas abnehmen würde, dass man es aufbewahren würde in Gläsern, so dass man bereit wäre für alle möglichen Versuche durch künstliche Befruchtung mehr und mehr neue Menschen zu züchten. Denn den Amerikanern fehlt es an Arbeitskräften. Sie brauchen mehr Kinder, nicht Arbeiter brauchen sie, sondern Soldaten. Es geht darum, Soldaten zu züchten.
So then the broadcast continue and I will choose, doesn't need translation, make a fragment of the second chapter. There is a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 chapter. That's the chapter 1, which we will not listen to entirely, and a fragment of the second chapter, which is called Tutuguri. Just a fragment. Why I'm bringing that is Antonin Artaud was very shocked by this interdiction, and he took the attention and the time to answer to certain journalists and articles that were published in the newspapers. And one article was published in the Combat, in the newspaper Die Combat, and he answered to this by, it's again a fragment, saying, I will say it in French and then translate it easier for me. Je me fais de ce fameux grand public une bien plus haute idée que vous-même. Je le crois infiniment moins pourri de préjugés que vous le pensez. Ceux qui lundi soir assiégeaient la radio et attendaient avec une curiosité et impatience jamais vues, l'émission étant justement des gens de ce grand public. So what he said at one point in this letter to the journalist is that, to resume, that he has a much higher estimate and view of what is this famous grand public the journalist refer to, that the broadcast would have heard the large public, the grand public of the radio. And Arto takes exactly this argument and saying that probably he has a higher estimate and his understanding maybe better this grand public than the newspaper speaking under the name of this blockage of the broadcasting. And he speak at this point of the people who came to hear, because at the time, radio broadcasting, you could go at the radio, and it was a very normal thing to do. You would go there and listen to the broadcast being on the radio there with other people. So there was a lot of people who came to listen to Antonin Artaud broadcast, and he said, well, those people are part of this grand public. And maybe that's where I want to start. It's which publics are we speaking of? Which majority? What is a public? What are publics? And when we work in museums, it's a constant question. It's a constant question. It's a question we are asked to answer constantly, first of all, by the politicians. And maybe I do think it's a field of misunderstanding, a field of conflict, which I don't feel we are even close to have final solution how to deal with that. I will very little speak of Bozen and what happened in Bozen. For a simple reason is there was 4 months of media wordings on it, so anyone interested can go on internet to see this aspect of the thing. Me, I haven't finished my relationship with Bozen, so I'm not in a time of having a reflective, synthetic analysis of it. I'm in the middle of it, and it's taking a different road than I thought. And so I'm at the middle of really reconsidering how to act. And I will just say one thing. It's one day, one Saturday, when the exhibition was still up, the exhibition contained many works, many documents, approximately 400 works, but it had arrived to a point in Bolzano that the media were only speaking not of a work, but of an image of a work. And I resisted to engage into the discussion of the image of the work. And there was the announce by the all the local newspapers that the Schutzen would make an important demonstration on one Saturday, and which all the newspapers call and say, well, how are you going to react? Is it going to be a problem? I mean, how can you have the Schutzen, you know, in front of the museum? And I simply answer, I do not have any problem with the Schutzen coming here in front of the museum. So this Saturday morning, there was 10 Shutsan who came, and 800 people came to see the exhibition during this momentum. Evidently, it was a combination of things. It was this combination of the auto-publicity that has generated the instrumentalization of the story of the frog into the use of the opposition between Schutzen and what the newspaper were considering a normal public. Well, in this 800 person coming to the museum, evidently, certainly, I don't know, but certainly, being in Alto Adige in South Tyrol, there was many practicant Catholics in the museum. There was only 10 Schutzen. So, yeah. Well, a Schutzen, it's a very... well, maybe in German you can... And so, it's what I'm trying to deal with here, it's the deformation of the perspective we have of what is happening. It's the deformation by the media, but the media is an extremely strong tool in the economical system, but in the political system. Today we have, I think, no politics which are not linked to direct media power. So, to continue on this media field, when I was dismissed, I was in China, and I simply received an email informing that I was dismissed. And the same day, and that's interesting. And same day, the board of the museum sent a press release to the press. So in one way, I learned the event at the same time than the press. The press was informed, and it was almost online. I don't know, at the same time, probably I read my emails on the evening in China. My phone was cut, and my access to my museum emails were cut. I mean, I couldn't speak through my cell phone, and I couldn't read what I was receiving. I mean, my email were not cut. My access to my email were cut. That means emails could still come. But I couldn't access anymore my email. So what I'm interested, because I am interested in this story, it's what, and I think I'm completely agreeing with what I've been saying earlier. There is no censorship in this story of museum. The work of Kippenberger was in the exhibition until the 21 of September, the end of the exhibition. What I'm really worried, interested, and still ready with a lot of energy is something which I've been living for many years, and it's not new to me. It's the question of public funding, of public space, of private sphere, and of independency of opinions and thoughts, I would say. And I think today we are in a very conflictual time, also because the media have succeeded to confound the subject very strongly and blurred those fields. So it becomes harder and harder, in one way, for, I think, a visitor to understand where stand the public sphere in relation to the private, where stand the political policy, cultural policy, in relation to necessity of immediate profit. It is interesting that I. Oops, it doesn't matter. So I have been very much into Italy and South Tyrol, evidently. So I'm going to kind of speak of that, but not only. But just 4 December, La Repubblica. La Repubblica is discussing in full page, right, the decision of the minister, Italian cultural minister, Bondi, of the Berlusconi government, to give the highest direction of the beni culturali, of the bien culturel, okay, to Mr. Mario Resca, who is a very famous manager and who has worked and developed McDonald's economical policy. Now, the justification of the cultural minister to hire a manager coming from having worked for McDonald's is that it's time that the public patrimoine generate profit in Italy. Italy has an incredible heritage, but like many countries, and the analysis today of the government that it's not sought, it's not run as a profit enterprise as it should be today. Civil society's reaction appeared, and a thousand of signatures were assembled to force the minister to broach this question of this nomination to the Consiglio, to the Conseil. And that's what is happening now. That's one fact which is happening just now. The other fact, we are the 3rd of December, just the day before, also a full page. It's the main newspapers. That's Corriere della Sera, main national newspaper. We are being explained that there is not a group, but a kind of people who seems to think the same way, Vargas Llosa, Robert Hughes, and Paul Virilio, which they name the new anti-modern, who see great danger with contemporary art, but evidently not all contemporary art, but what they would say the commercial and the cynical and this scandal. Scandalous, playing with the notion of scandal. We all have our opinion, we all have our position, we all defend certain thinking, and they show 6 images of 6 works of artists, and I will name them. Damien Hirst, Jan Fabre, Jason Rhodes, Jeff Koons, Maurizio Cattelan, and Isa Genscon. So I'm not going to enter, you know, if it's right for this one or wrong for this one. Evidently, I think it's extremely problematic. It's really, really a big problem. Today in Italy, when Italy is fighting to reassess the possibility of having public institution, because the texture of public institution has been really suffering a lot. Berlusconi government is working very strongly to destabilize this movement. Another, after I stop with example, but another one is evidently What is happening with the biggest project about modern and contemporary art in Italy, which is Zaha Hadid museums in Roma, Maxi, which has been a battlefield, a total battle, political battlefield, of who finally will have the power of deciding who will be the director of this museum. And there we go to a second question I would like to address, is the question of the Maxi Museum in Roma is, should it stay a direct administrative service from run by the ministry, or should a foundation be created? So today the discussion is that a foundation should be created. And this question of foundation will bring me back to Bolzano, and that will probably be the second and last time I will speak of Bolzano tonight, except in question, if you have question, with pleasure. It's the question of public money and how the administration of public money, which I think is a key question. I worked 10 years in France, so maybe I'm deformed, because France has a lot of problems today. It's heavily in crisis in its public institutions, not only museum, which goes to social offices, to we see what is happening in school today, which in France had not lived that. For decades, it was not allowed that police cannot enter in schools and make a fouille. I'm sorry, Jean-Baptiste. How do you say fouille, les fouilles policières? So, for the first time now, it is possible to enter a school and without informing the parents before, and church for drugs or anything, with dogs. And that just happened last week and this week, and it's evidently a very discussed situation. But it's something we saw that by the laws were banished. In France, schools are protected space, and you have to make a request, the police, to enter this protected space. You cannot enter it directly. So there is a destructuration in a very abrupt way of what can still be the public sphere in terms of institution. And I'm very interested and very committed to this question. So I had a lot of conflicts with politicians, because sometimes we don't agree. And what is that task in protecting the public institution for contemporary art, I think, is completely that we can use public money without having to justify on what. And it's provocative for many persons when you say that, because public money, something, okay. I'm sorry, I didn't
just a
hear.
Just a second.
Yeah.
A little bit.
Yeah. Okay. Is that better? Sorry. And that's a real battlefield, I think, today. And there, it's what we attach. It's something which deals with morale. We hear there is entire morale around how can we define what is used with public money, how l'usage, the question of l'usage. Sorry, sometimes it's hard to me. Yeah. Modern contemporary art museum have to be a place which constitutes a protected space, a protected space where experience, where a proposition can be lived, can be produced, can be discussed, can be a contradictory space, and it's essential. The day it loses totally this parameter, it's not an activator anymore in the way of being a contemporary actor in a given society. Attached to this question, for me, comes the question of the patrimoine. I worked in museums, so if I work in museum, I have to keep defining what is a museum, and I'm a very conservative person on this relationship. I consider museums have collections. And I totally defend that a museum which is not active in collecting should maybe, I'm speaking of modern contemporary art museum, should reconsider to be named a museum. It can be named, you know, cultural center, etc. So the question of foundation, to come back to should we form a foundation or be run as a direct service, as an administrative service of a public administration, is a key question, because it brings the question of the autonomous body, juridical body, versus administrative service of a public administration. And when it comes to discuss policies of spending public money, it is definitely a key question. I mean, who are we? What are our field of negotiation with the political representation? Saying that, I think the difficulty of today of still finding harmonious, even if it's an exaggerated term, but a kind of harmonious relationship on this field, is disturbed by another fact. Are our politicians today really representing people? I'm very in doubt. And I was just telling Jean-Baptiste earlier, I really liked one short article Badiou gave to Le Monde, and just the day after Sarkozy gave 37 milliard to the banks to save the bank system of France. And I have to say, I'm not at all a person who is convinced by Badiou thinking. But he was so fantastic this day. He just wrote this short piece to Le Monde saying, are we represented by this political power who can, in 48 hours, find such amount of money to save the bank system of France, but for years, haven't been able to find a fragment of this money to save the sécurité sociale, the social security system of illness? So it's a naive commentary, but I think it's an essential one. The naivety, Badiou is really not a naive person, the naivety he decided at this day to answer to the French government was wonderful, because was a way to just, on a very simple field, to question this question of representation. So when politicians speak to museal institution about majority, about large public, about frequency, I think that's where pressure happens. And I will probably surprise you here, but I think what now is called the frog story has very little to do with art censorship. Very little. What is at stake there, and that's where I have decided to fight against Foundation Museum with some lawyers, and it's not at all the question of censorship on an artwork. Okay, we had to, our life was hell for 4 months to have, you know, being constantly hassled by newspaper and politician. But what was at stake was that a new foundation has appeared, which is mainly, but not totally, mainly funded by the South Tyrol province, with the history of South Tyrol. There is this new museum opening, which many people came. When I say many, I'm not saying the majority of South Tyrol people, but many people came. And when it was open, very curious, with very different experience and things. What has happened the first day of opening of museum was a displacement of the question using the image of an artwork. And the question at stake here is first, conservative forces wanting to block certain policies which has been established by South Tyrol government at the moment of electoral campaign. And evidently, museum is a very strong at this moment visibility. And more perversely and more invisibly, the question of the independence of such an institution with public money. And I think that's really the question at stake in museum and in many situations. So it is a situation linked with, as I said, some conservative force at a certain development of South Tyrol, but also not a South Tyrol specificity. It's something I lived in Marseille, in Nantes, and other people I work with live in other places. So also to the story of, you know, specificity and non-specificity, also to reclose the discussion of it only to its local parameter is a kind of a problem. Link with that, something that I've been thinking a lot, it's the question of the political time and the institution time. I speak only, when I say institution, I speak of only what I know, the contemporary modern museum institution, which I here will resume as institution. An institution is a very long-term timing. New or not new, New evidently has a program, he has a project. He has a project which will also be modified in its way of developing. And he has a patrimoine in development. And this patrimoine, if we want that he speak, he has to be activated. And to be activated, I'm a believer, it's activated by a programmation. I cannot think museum as a collection and an exhibition program. For me, it's impossible. I always think museum as the constituency of a patrimoine active on, and how this patrimoine generate or enrich from or generate programmation. So it's extremely important. Programmation is what, I think, define the nature of what is becoming an institution. We know that today, with some distance, because it's always hard to speak of something which is close to us in time, but if we look museums today with, saying, 25 years of perspective, to just give us some distance, strong collection like Eindhoven, for example, are extraordinary collection because they are collection which speak of being engaged in their time, speak of subjectivity in the construction of art history, but expose it in its construction. And it's a collection which is a risky one. It's not one which protects itself to redundancy in what it brings. So here it's something very important. It's how is constituted a patrimoine, a public patrimoine. And maybe the question today, which is related of, you know, who a minister of culture will decide will manage the direction of the public goods, cultural goods, is a key question, absolutely a key question. So that's what I wanted to bring as a field, to then go to the relation to public institution, employees, and the freedom of opinions. It's very interesting that... That's maybe I will speak more from a perspective of 10 years in France. Huh? We cannot escape from our own life. It's how political power use of the economy of institution to destabilize his capacity to think, and also to generate kind of pre-restriction in what we can think or not, and what we can think, what we can do and produce or not. It is very interesting to see that some institutions become very strong, very meaningful in questioning its contemporaneity, which is not an institution which go into reduced sense of being just a transmitter of cultural goods, but an institution which is contradictory in what it proposes, how the political machine gets into not, never, on content. I think you never speak of content. It's not about that. It's about who works in such an institution and how to bring a fragility into the relation of the workers and the authority. And the fragilization of the internal structure is, I'm convinced of that, one of the most powerful tools from the politics to control an institution. So, saying all that, I think we do have to fight strongly, and I use the term fight, for conserving public-funded institutions. It's extremely important. At a time where many countries, and evidently I'm not someone who can speak of Germany, but many countries in Europe and in well, North America is another story, and we see what has happened. But bringing less and less strong situation of institution and the way of thinking patrimoine. And that's, it has to be into the public sphere, and we cannot relay this responsibility to the private sphere. I'm really against that. Now, to conclude, I would like to speak of one artist very briefly to conclude on this question of to who we speak, to how many people artists speak or versus institutions speak, of Lydia Clark. Lydia Clark was this, I suppose many of you know, was this artist, Brazilian artist, who during the dictature left and was in France. She worked in the Sorbonne. I mean, what was the birth of a new department in the Sorbonne dealing with visual arts, art plastique? It was really the beginning, late 60s, of this new department. Before then, there was no notion of visual arts in the Sorbonne. It was theoretical and historian, but not practice. And she worked there, and after being a very known artist in Brazil, after having been in the Biennale for Brazil, as working a lot from painting to three-dimensional object, opening up the subjectivity of her relationship towards space, she was part with Elio Ortizica of bringing a new question in Brazil between the public place and the private sphere of the artist. And then she worked with group students, student groups in the Sorbonne, doing only collective experience. On this part of her work, which is a few years, for a long time, Brazil didn't transmit anything. She was the painter and the three-dimensional object artist, but there was a blackout on the collective experience she did. And then she came back after to Brazil, and she worked on the structuration of the self, what she called the structuration of the self, where intervention as an artist were only from her to one person. And that was happening in her place. So she excluded, coming from a very collective communal experience, she went back to Brazil and almost totally, not totally, but almost restricted her practice to this private sphere of she called it a séance, like a psychanalyst, séance. Okay, and she called the visitor a client, and she developed years of works only in this relationship. So all these works, 25 years of works of Lydia Clark, were really, frankly, not discussed after her death in Brazil for a very long time and outside of Brazil. So it's not just concours de circonstances. it is, you know, something as a task, which an impossibility of speaking of this work for all this time until, you know, it started not to be quite known and shown in the last 10 years. But with extraordinary problem, it's how do we show this work? What do we do with this work? So in one way, she integrated a resistance of being shown in her practice that make extremely difficult to show her work after. I mean, structuration of the self is bringing headaches to museum people how to show it. And contradiction and discussion and colloque. We had colloque in Sao Paulo. Do we have the right or not to do that? It's misunderstanding the work. Without the artist, it's impossible, etc., etc. So that's an aspect I'm very interested in. I took this example, but I work a lot, for example, with Dieter Roth for 10 years, which was definitely a person also very interested in his relation to public institution. It's, I think, I as a curator, a museum director, I cannot speak for the artist, evidently. I can only speak for my own decision, of which is a curatorial decision, and I resist to think that as a curator, museum director, you have to give explanations. Because we are in a time where museums are so have an enormous pressure of the mediation. I think we never heard so much in the last years the term mediation in a museum institution. You know, every project which has not a large program of mediation is a problematic one, which means, and I'm closing on that, I go back on Arto, we take people for stupid people. And I resist to the mediation development in museum. I think people, persons, are very articulated and have their own way to develop their relationship with artworks, or against, or, you know, not wanting, or loving, or I don't know. And that's absolutely okay. And so the instrument we are being asked, the tool, because it's called a tool, we are being asked to produce in museum under the term of mediation, I think is a non-productive situation for museum in term, if we think museum as a constituency of patrimoine, which continues that in relation to an activation of thinking its contemporaneity. Okay. That's it.